Welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 16. If you love tennis and you want to improve your game, then this podcast is for you. Every week, I answer questions from tennis enthusiasts just like yourself from all over the world and help them improve their tennis game. My hope is that as you listen to this podcast, you'll get information that is helpful to your game. You'll be able to go out and practice using that information, and you too can improve your tennis. Two quick reminders before we get into the content for today's podcast. First of all, I'd like to remind you all about the Essential Tennis Forums. They're on EssentialTennis.com, and it's a place where you can go and chat with other tennis enthusiasts, just like yourself. You can talk about professional players and tournaments. You can share ideas on how to practice and work out. You can also ask questions for myself to answer and the other experts that are at EssentialTennis.com. And it's just a great place to go and share your love of the game. So go to EssentialTennis.com and just click on Forum, and you can sign up there. Lastly, I'd also like to remind you about the Essential Tennis newsletter. It's a weekly email newsletter that I send out to everybody who signed up. And it's just a quick note to let you guys know about the new content on EssentialTennis.com. Each week we have new podcasts with new content, answering questions and talking about certain topics. We also have weekly gear reviews talking about equipment. And also I write a weekly instructional blog as well. So it's just a quick email to let you know what's new at Essential Tennis so that you can be alerted to the new content that can help you improve your game.
And now it's time for Essential Tennis Sports Medicine Talk with Dr. Jack Kripsack.
Hi, Dr. Jack. How are you doing?
Good, Ian. Yourself? How was your vacation?
I'm doing great. And vacation was great. Very relaxing. Got some fishing in and went to see a wedding in the family. It's almost a little bit too long, though. I'm glad to be back and finally teaching tennis again. So thanks for asking.
Sure. My pleasure.
Well, today I'd like to talk about tennis elbow. It's a topic that somebody brought up on the Essential Tennis Forums and something that I think is really a very big topic. It's something that a lot of tennis players I know deal with from personal experience, something I've dealt with a little bit. And I know even in other sports and even just daily activities, it's an injury that's pretty common. Is it something that you've dealt with a lot?
Sure. Ian, every week I'm seeing maybe a half a dozen people with some form of tennis or golfer's elbow problem.
Right.
It's very, very common. It's definitely a large part of my practice. Definitely.
Okay. Well, why don't we start off by just you describing a little bit exactly, you know, physically, what exactly is being disrupted here in this injury? Is it a muscle? Is it a tendon? Tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. The injury is known as a lateral epicondylitis, typically in the acute phase, and it's an inflammation of the tendon from the, are you ready for this now?
All right.
The extensor carpi radialis brevis muscle.
Wow, that's nice.
You sound very smart at cocktail parties if you can say that one.
I'll try to remember.
All right. So it's a muscle that runs in your forearm, and it helps extend your wrist backwards. And the muscle runs from the hand, from the bones in your hands back to the lateral part of your elbow. So there's a little bony projection on the lateral part of your elbow, which will be very tender. And what happens is with poor form or poor training, then you will aggravate this tendon and you can have little micro tears in the tendon itself or even a little micro tear of the tendon off the bone, which becomes inflamed, and this is what causes pain and weakness, and especially weakness associated with the pain. So the people will have a hard time shaking hands or gripping an object or picking up a cup of coffee. That's the main muscle that's involved. There can sometimes be a secondary muscle, and this one's called the extensor digitorum profundus.
Okay.
And that's another forearm muscle that's responsible for extending the middle and the ring finger of your hand. So it'll bring those fingers up. And if you try to either extend your wrist or extend those two fingers against resistance by the physician or who's ever examining you, and you can help locate the pain, and this can help direct us for therapy.
Okay.
So basically, again, in the acute phase, it's a tendinitis where you'll have acute swelling, inflammation in the tissue, and then should this be something, as we've discussed in the past, where it's long-term, then the tendon becomes arthritic and remodeled and becomes a tendinosis.
Okay.
So acutely, if you have this for like a month or less, then it's going to be a tendinitis, and usually if it's longer than that, especially several months, it'll be your tendinosis.
Okay. So not dealing with it, even if it's not very painful, can lead to long-term damage?
Yes, it changes into that arthritic remodeling. As I've described before, it goes from the nice elastic rubber band to the piece of dried-out shoe leather is what happens. And then it becomes more difficult to treat.
Okay, so it's definitely important to get on top of it quickly then.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, with anything, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Sure.
So if you have good form and you hit your strokes correctly, then this is really going to cut down on your causing the tennis elbow in the first place.
Sure.
And I'm sure you can speak to this as well as I can with proper form on hitting the tennis ball. And I know I spoke about this in the past, where when you hit your forehand, you want to get that nice brush and not roll your wrist over the top of the ball, kind of like you were using a screwdriver going counterclockwise, because that's going to really aggravate that tendon attachment on the elbow. And you know, just trying to use your arm too much. And I'm sure you see this with a lot of your beginners that are trying to get that topspin on the ball.
Yeah, definitely.
That really haven't learned how to hit it properly.
Yeah. Well, you described it very well. I think in terms of technique, the most common cause of problems in the forearm is definitely just trying to use smaller parts of the body too much. During any good ground stroke or a serve, I've seen people have tennis elbow problems from the serve as well. The core should definitely be used first and foremost to strengthen the shot. And on a good ground stroke, a forehand or a backhand, pronation, which is rotation from inside to outside, or supination should be used. But in my experience, it should be more the bigger muscles, the shoulder, that should be rotating the arm to the inside or outside. And I think where people run into the most trouble is using the forearm to actually power the shot.
Correct.
And
correct.
Forearm is just not big and strong enough to hit, you know, you can make the shot over the net. You can hit a shot in the court, but as soon as you start trying to hit a higher level shot with more spin and more speed, it just wears out the forearm extremely quickly.
That's absolutely correct. You know, I've talked before about the whole kinetic chain. You initiate your force from the ground up, and it comes from the legs, the hips, the torso, the shoulder, and then, you know, you're getting that final touch on the ball with the acceleration through the arm and forearm. And just like in baseball, you know, a lot has talked recently about pitchers and pitch counts, especially with little league kids, who will get little leaguer's elbow, which is a lot of a same kind of issue, but the strain comes on the inside of the elbow, and you can get tears and tendinosis of something called the ulnar collateral ligament, which stabilizes the inside or medial part of the elbow just from trying to throw with your arm too much. And it's a challenge to teach the young kids to make sure that they use that kinetic chain and use the core strengthening so that the arm is just the follow through. But that, like you said, it's not where you get your power. Your power is from your core and engaging that whole kinetic chain.
Sure. Well, besides tennis, what other, are there any other specific activities? Tennis, you know, with poor technique like we just talked about, it's very easy to overwork that part of the body quickly. In your experience, in other sports or in other activities in general, are there things, you know, to watch out for in other sports or just in daily activities that are going to make this worse?
Sure. Briefly, I told you that one story about how I got it from playing too much air hockey. But one thing that I see quite commonly is poor technique on exercising your triceps muscle at the gym.
Okay.
You know, and there's several ways that you can exercise your triceps. If you sit like in a Nautilus or a Cybex type machine or a Bodymaster or whatever, you may sit in a chair and extend your arm out against the pad so that the elbow goes from being bent to extended.
Right.
You may take some hand weights and put them on your side and extend your arm upwards, or you may do some extensions to the back. You may have a bar in front of you and you with a pulley that you bring down so that your arms are in front of you and extend down to the ground.
Right.
The one thing that can cause a tennis elbow is bending your elbow more than 90 degrees during that exercise.
Okay.
Once you bring the elbow back towards your shoulder, once your hand starts coming back towards your shoulder and bends that elbow more than 90 degrees, there is a tremendous stress on that tendon to get the elbow from greater than 90 degrees to 90 degrees, and that's where the injury occurs.
Okay.
And you're not gaining anything significant in strength. All you're doing is stressing the tendon. So you want to make very sure when you're at the health club or working out at home and building up your triceps that your range of motion goes from a 90-degree angle to 5 degrees, because you don't want to fully lock the elbow either.
So okay.
90 degrees to 5 degrees, 90 degrees to 5 degrees, and that's an excellent range of motion to build strength and reduce the risk of injury. And then, of course, when you exercise one muscle group, as I've talked about in the past, you have to do the opposite or antagonistic group, which
sure.
will require you doing a biceps curl, okay, with the weights being within 20% of each other. So if you're doing 50-pound curls, you're doing at least 40 to 50 pounds of the tricep extension. And as with anything, you know, form is paramount. Good form reduces your injuries.
Okay. All right. Great. Definitely good advice. Well, one more thing I have to add in terms of technique specifically, and this goes for really all injuries, but it's definitely a cause of tennis elbow specifically. I find that generally in lower to mid-level players, there's a lot of extra tension being carried in the muscles of a lot of recreational level players. And this is actually something I personally went through just a couple weeks ago. I've been trying to change my one-handed backhand, and it's something I've been struggling with for a couple of years. But anyway, over the last couple weeks, as I was making some adjustments to my grip and a couple other things as well, I started getting tennis elbow for the first time. And I found it was because I was getting tight at contact. I was tensing up my forearm and really trying to kind of rotate my racket against that tension. And I find that for a lot of players, trying to work against their own body and having tense muscles can really wear down muscles and tendons very quickly. Does that sound accurate?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there was a study published in one of my sports medicine journals that actually studied that with electromyograms in the forearm, and it showed that the tighter the grip strength on the backhand, the more tension applied to that extensor carpi radialis brevis tendon, and the higher likelihood of developing tennis elbow was. So,
okay.
I mean, you have to keep firm grip, but if you're squeezing too tight and getting too tense, it's going to increase your chances of getting that injury, definitely.
Sure. Yeah, and
so
just
that's a good observation. Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, yeah, just, I mean, purely from a results standpoint, just from a technique standpoint, staying relaxed is going to make a one-handed backhand much more effective in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, not only is it a better stroke to stay relaxed, but you're going to avoid injury as well. And you know, if everybody out there listening, if you go out and relax completely your arm, your shoulder, your forearm on a one-handed backhand, and all you can hit is a weak shot, then you're not using your core properly. You're not using the big muscles in your body. You should be able to hit a solid one-handed backhand without muscling the ball. And if you can't, then you're not using the big parts of your body very well. You need to be rotating your core more effectively.
Let me just ask you a question now, you know, along those lines, because when you go to hit a serve, you want to keep that grip nice and loose to really get that good snap on the ball, get that nice pronation and snap the ball at 2 o'clock and get that nice spin on it.
Yep.
Would you want to keep it that loose or a little firmer on the backhand? Because I'm thinking, you know, you're not choking it to death, but if you keep it as loose on the serve on the backhand, might you lose some control or what's your opinion on that?
Well, in my experience, I have yet to work with somebody. Actually, I take that back. Possibly with one exception. I've yet to work with somebody who was ever too relaxed on any stroke.
Okay, great.
the vast majority of recreational level players are carrying extra tension on any given stroke. And for the most part, everybody could benefit from relaxing more as they make a stroke, any stroke, and especially ground strokes where it should be long, it should be smooth, and you're trying to create power and spin. But if you do that by muscling the ball, you're going to get tired very quickly, and you just won't be as efficient. Your results will not be as good for how much energy you're putting into the stroke. So in general, I would say definitely more relaxed is better, unless you're a 5.0 player. Then maybe we can talk about tension. But
all right. Fair enough.
Well, one thing, equipment-wise, we talked about this a little bit before, Dr. Jack. I think you said that you had read a study having to do with grip size.
Yes.
I've heard in the past that a larger grip might help tennis elbow. Is that correct?
You know, that's interesting. There was a study published in the American Journal of Sports Medicine July 2 years ago, and it talked about, you know, measuring your grip size, you know, with the going from the crease in your palm up to your the tip of your middle finger.
Yeah.
And that's where you get your size. And they took athletes and had them take their grip size, a quarter inch smaller and a quarter inch larger, and had them hit tennis balls, again, hooked up with EMGs, it's a little needle that's placed in your muscle, and it sends a recording, a muscle activity recording to a monitor to tell you how much it's activated.
Okay.
And it showed with that the grip size within a quarter inch or a quarter size either side of what you're measured for really had no effect on muscle tension.
Really?
So it may not really have that. I think that from the other study, the actual tightness of your grip is a more determining factor for developing the tennis elbow than the actual size of the racket.
Okay. Well, I guess that would kind of say then whichever grip size is most comfortable for the player to handle, I guess, would be the best?
That would be absolutely correct, yes.
Okay. All right, good. Well, we've talked about technique and ways that you get tennis elbow. Now, can you give us a little bit of information on treatment? How can we go about getting rid of it, and how about trying to avoid it in the first place as far as strengthening goes?
Sure. First, correct form. It's correct form on the forehand, correct form on the backhand, and that's your job, Ian. You have to teach them properly.
Okay? Seeing a pattern here.
Yes.
Form's important.
Yep. And then, you know, you'll see some people wearing tennis elbow braces.
Yeah.
And one thing you have to make sure, if you do have a tennis elbow brace, and I like using them after I've given somebody a steroid injection to wear for a few days to take the tension off the muscle, or I may have a patient wear it if they're resistant to getting an injection and they just want to do some physical therapy or try some conservative treatments first. And one thing I notice a lot of times, the patients won't put the tennis elbow brace in the right area.
Okay.
You want to have the pressure point over the belly of the muscle. It shouldn't be over where the pain is or close to the pain. It should be about two-thirds of the way up the elbow from the wrist, or from the wrist to the elbow,
okay,
right in the fat belly of the muscle, a little to the lateral side to reduce your pressure. And you can check it by moving the brace around a little bit and firmly squeezing someone's hand, and then when you get to the area that it's the least painful or not painful at all, then you know you have it in the right spot. But again, using a tennis elbow brace is, it's just kind of like putting a little Band-Aid on the problem. You're not really fixing the problem.
Sure.
So if you have an acute acute tendonitis, it's something that's, you know, you may have just been lifting a heavy object, or you just hit a shot in a certain way and you felt something tweak, and now it's inflamed. We can go with some anti-inflammatories initially, ibuprofen, naproxen sodium, like an Aleve or an Advil, whatever.
Okay.
Ice it down. Ice is really, really important. One thing I like to have my patients do is ice massage.
Okay.
Fill paper Dixie cups up with water, throw them in the freezer after they've frozen, peel the top half of the cup off, use the bottom half as a handle, put the ice right over the area that's painful, leave it there for 5 minutes, and then do a firm massage in a circular motion for 10 minutes, thaw out for an hour, and do it again. And do that every night when you get home for about a week, and that really helps cool down the inflammation and swelling.
Okay.
You know, you always hear about ice the first 48 hours and then heat after. As long as it's painful and warm and tender, ice it down because it's inflamed and you want to cool that inflammation down. So the anti-inflammatories are nice. You can use a tennis elbow brace initially during the day so that you don't aggravate it while you're lifting or shaking hands during your activities of daily living. Let it calm down, which is another nice area for you to use the tennis elbow brace, not just for playing tennis, but to help take away the stress and strain on that tendon while you're up and about during the day and again, doing your activities of daily living, whatever it is that you do in your job or at home.
Okay.
And then should that not work, we can always try physical therapy. One of the treatments that we like to use is something called iontophoresis, which I've described in the past, where you have a little corticosteroid and pulsed into the area with an electric current, which works nicely. People that are needle phobic won't have a problem with this because you're not getting injected with anything. And again, typically 4 to 6 treatments every other day, used every other day, is a nice treatment for this. It'll cool things down. After that, you know, then you're starting to look at some of the chronic problems, the tendinoses we've talked about in the past with, you know, the shockwave therapy or the prolotherapy to help cause an inflammation once it's become arthritic to help the tissue rejuvenate itself.
Okay.
And that's usually pretty nice. And physical therapy, you know, proper exercising. Now, if someone has been lifting weights and they're doing that that tricep extension wrong, correct your form, and that definitely should help.
Sure.
If you're not lifting weights, then definitely doing some weightlifting would be great. You know, doing little wrist curls with some hand weights, wrist extensions, getting a little vice grip and squeezing that, doing some biceps curls, some tricep extensions. Great exercises to do to help prevent and rehabilitate from a tennis elbow problem.
Okay. Now, where's the line between, because obviously if it's inflamed and it's already in pain, then at that point going and lifting and trying to make it strong would just be bad for it, correct? Or not necessarily?
Yes and no. Using proper technique and helping to strengthen the muscles to take the tension off the tendon is actually a good thing. That's fine. But you would just want to start with a lower weight and use proper technique and build up. So in other words, let's say you've been at the health club and you're doing bicep or tricep extensions and you're working out of the machine, you're doing 40 pounds. And now all of a sudden you've injured yourself and it hurts to do that. Will you back off to, say, 15 or 20 pounds or at a weight that it doesn't hurt? And maybe you want to do a little endurance training instead of just strength training initially. And the difference between that is the endurance training, you're going to do 15 to 20 repetitions. If you can't do at least 15, it's too much weight. And if you can do more than 20, the weight's not enough. So you want to find that nice zone. For your strength training, you're doing 8 to 12 reps, and then you're pretty much, you know, beat during that 8 to 12 zone, and that's as much as you can lift. But you shouldn't be feeling any pain with either one. So you can get on the weights, but you just might have to back off the weight that you lift.
Okay. So basically, it's a matter of finding the correct weight initially. So if it's already hurting, it's good to get some reps in there and start trying to get it stronger. What if it's hurting no matter what? You know, you've got a 1-pound dumbbell and it's just angry
killing
at you. Yeah.
You know what? You're coming into the doctor's office and you're getting it checked out.
All right.
And you know, my new toy, which I absolutely love, is a musculoskeletal ultrasound. You know, we put a little jelly on the probe, put it over your elbow, and I get a beautiful image of the tendon, and I can tell you right then and there, you know, what the degree of damage is, you know, whether it's do you have a little chip fracture in the elbow? Do you have a little or an avulsion fraction where the tendons pulled some of the bone away? Do you have some micro tears? Do you have a gross tear? And it's quick and easy and painless. And, you know, if you're claustrophobic about an MRI scan, you don't have to worry. You don't have to hassle with your insurance company to get an approval for a CT or an MRI.
Okay.
So it's my new favorite toy, and it's really a great way to get a good view of what's going on.
Okay. One more question about treatment.
Sure.
I've noticed over the past couple years that cortisone shots have been kind of popular as a way to relieve a tennis elbow among tennis players.
Sure.
Is that a smart thing to do? Does it actually help heal it, or does it just mask it?
Oh, now again, you're talking about two different problems. If you have an acute tendonitis, now this is something you just did, and it's painful a week or two, and you want to get it better quick, a little shot of a corticosteroid is fine.
Okay.
It'll help cool it down, but then you got to shut it down for a few days. That's the one problem that you can run into. Because
let it heal.
Right. Not only that, the steroid will soften up that tendon. So if you go out and play the next day or within 2 or 3 days of getting that shot, you go to lift weights or you start picking up some groceries from the store, you can snap that tendon. Then you've got a big problem because
It's
going to have to be surgically corrected. So you're not happy. The doctor that gave you the shot's not happy because now you're not happy with him or her. And the orthopedic surgeon that has to try to fix that is not happy because now instead of having this nice firm tendon, he's got to try to put sutures through overcooked spaghetti. It's like mush and it doesn't stick because you've softened it up to that point. So typically, and I do steroid injections and with great success, but you have to remember that it's for the acute tendonitis, not the chronic tendinosis, because in the tendinosis now there's no more inflammatory cells. You've got to rejuvenate that tissue. But in the acute tendonitis, they work very effectively. Give them the tennis elbow brace, take the tension off, shut them down for a few days, ice, anti-inflammatories, start on a rehab program in about, 4 or 5 days, take it easy, and then you're fine. And it's very successful, but you have to remember not to be cavalier with your return to activities after you've gotten that shot, or you're going to be looking at a lot of problems.
Okay, great. All right, well, thanks for talking, Dr. Jack. We got a lot of good information out there. And
yeah, great. This is, like I said, this is something I'm seeing, multiple times every week. It's really big in the practice.
Sure. All right, well, hopefully that helps some people out there. And if anybody has any further questions about this or any other sports medicine type topic, sign up for the forums at Essential Tennis. Dr. Jack has his own section there, and you can post your question there, and we'll get to it on a future episode of the podcast.
Yeah, that'd be great. Come on, people, send me some emails. I'd love to hear from you.
Excellent. All right, well, Dr. Jack, thanks very much for dropping by. It's been
my
a pleasure talking to you.
Always, Ian, always.
All right. Well, I look forward to having you on again soon.
All right. You take care.
Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.
And now it's time for Essential Tennis Q&A.
All right. Our first question from a listener today comes from Bruce in Florida. Bruce has taken the time to write me several questions. Bruce, I always appreciate the good input and questions that you send me. Today he says, what techniques or keys do you focus on for controlling serve direction? Are they different for first and second serves? Good question. But basically, for any tennis stroke, any stroke at all, there's three things that are going to determine where exactly the ball lands. So to aim any shot in tennis, it's going to come back to controlling three factors, and they are the racket face at contact. That's where your strains are facing when you make contact with the ball. The path that your racket is traveling as you make contact. So whatever direction your racket is moving in when you meet the ball. And lastly, the velocity or the momentum that your racket is traveling at during your swing when you make contact with the ball. The combination of those three things together are going to determine where the ball goes exactly in the court on the other side. So on a serve specifically, if you want to aim where your serve goes, There's three main types of serves, a flat serve, a slice serve, and a kick serve. It's going to be different, those three factors, for each of those three different serves. For example, on a flat serve, the racket path is moving towards your target. On a flat serve, you're not trying to hit with any spin, and so you're swinging forwards at contact towards your target. Wherever you're aiming, that's the direction your racket is moving as you make contact. Your racket face also is aimed at your target at contact. So all of your focus, all of your energy is all moving towards that target. You're trying to hit it flat with no spin, and all of your efforts are being used to hit the ball over the net and at your target. And so that's why it's the fastest serve. It's the most powerful serve because everything is moving and focused towards where you're trying to aim. So your racket face and your swing path are both moving towards your target. On a slice serve, you're trying to hit side spin. And so the path of your racket is going to be moving to the side. If you're right-handed, your racket path is going to be moving from left to right. So you're hitting the right side of the ball, and you're swinging to the right to make the ball rotate. Your racket face is going to vary depending on how much spin you're making. When you slice a serve, the ball is going to curve. It's going to curve from right to left. And so your racket face is probably not actually going to be facing at your target. When you make contact, your racket will probably actually be facing a little bit to the right of your target to account for that curve in the ball. And so as the ball curves from right to left, if you want to aim for a specific spot, if you want the ball to land in a specific spot, your racket face is actually going to be facing a little bit to the right of your target, depending on how much spin you're trying to make. If you're making a huge slice serve, it's going to be curving a lot, then you'll adjust your racket face accordingly to account for that rotation and that curve. Now, on a kick serve, which is topspin, your swing path is going to be going upwards. So at contact, you want your racket path to be moving upwards so that when you make contact, you make the ball rotate with topspin. It's rotating towards your target, end over end, towards the other side of the court. And so that causes the ball to curve downwards. Now, typically, a kick serve is going to be hit with a little bit of slice as well. Not very many kick serves are hit just with topspin. Usually there's a little bit of slice mixed in there as well. And so the racket face is therefore going to be dependent on exactly what kind or how much spin you're putting on the ball. If you're putting like half and half, half topspin and half slice on the ball, then your face will be facing a little bit to the right if you're right-handed to account for that little bit of curve from right to left. So that's pretty much it, Bruce. Those three factors are going to determine where the ball goes, the velocity, the racket face, and the path of the racket. And on all three of those different types of serves, the three factors are a little bit different. On a flat serve, when you add velocity, when you add momentum to the swing, then the ball travels faster forwards. On a slice serve or a kick serve, when you're swinging not through the ball, but to the side or upwards, when you speed that swing up and add more velocity, you're actually going to add rotation. Now, you're probably going to add speed as well. The ball will probably actually go a little bit faster along with adding more spin, but the main change is going to be in rotation. The faster you swing, the more the ball is going to spin. And again, you'll add speed as well, but you just have to realize that when you change the velocity on a spin serve, you're not necessarily going to see a lot of change in speed, but more so in spin. So, Bruce, hopefully that answers your question. Thanks for writing me another good one.
The Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by
Bridgewater Medical Group is a multi-specialty medical group located in Bridgewater, New Jersey, and is your home for primary care, gastroenterology, sports medicine, and general internal medicine. They offer a broad array of on-site, state-of-the-art services to make your healthcare experience more pleasurable. Scheduled appointments are preferred, but physician assistants are available for walk-in care. For more information, call Bridgewater Medical Group at 908-722-0808.
For more information on sponsors of the Essential Tennis Podcast or to become a sponsor, visit www.essentialtennis.com. And now, back to the show.
Our next question for today comes from Mimi, and she's in Massachusetts. She writes and says, I have been a recreational runner for as long as I can remember. Not fast, but dedicated. I actually ran the rainy Boston Marathon of 2007. I find when I am running more regularly, my tennis suffers. Lately, thanks to your podcast, I've been adding in side shuffles without crossing my feet, running backward, backpedaling, and running two steps and split stepping, ready to go in either direction. Is this going to get me anywhere? And also, is running as training just bad for tennis players? Is biking any better? Any advice would be great. Thanks again. Okay, well, Mimi, great question, and good fitness question. The first thing that I would say in response to that question is that you need to realize that tennis is an anaerobic sport. There's two main groupings of fitness, that is aerobic and anaerobic. Aerobic means that it's a long period of time and usually a little bit slower pace. And so you're looking at activities that are lasting 15 minutes or more, at least, is going to be an aerobic activity, something that's sustained and a physical challenge, such as running a marathon. And anaerobic activity is something that's a short burst and higher intensity. And that's what tennis is. Tennis is an anaerobic sport. It's quick, high intensity bursts. That's what points are. Typically, a tennis point is going to last somewhere around 5 or 10 seconds at the most. And then you get, usually, typically, about 15 seconds or 20 seconds of rest in between. And so that makes up for an anaerobic sport. You get really more time of rest than you do actually playing. And so to train your body to be a good tennis player, you have to do anaerobic workouts. Now, that doesn't mean that long distance running is bad for you. On the other hand, running, you know, 24 miles, running in a marathon, is not really going to be, you're not really going to see a lot of benefit there specifically to your tennis game. You're never going to need that much fitness to play out a lawn match. A lawn match for a recreational player is going to be like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. And again, there's more off time than there is on. You're going to be resting more than you are playing. So running for an hour to work on your tennis really doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, that doesn't mean it's not good for you, certainly. It's great to get that kind of workout, and it's something I don't have the discipline to do, so more power to you. Is it going to hurt your tennis? Not necessarily, but if all you do is aerobic and you don't do any anaerobic workout, then yes, it is going to be a detriment to your tennis. Now, what you want to do in order to be beneficial to your tennis is sprints. And again, probably about 20 or 30 second intervals in as fast as you can, or maybe building up to as fast as you can. That's going to be the type of thing you want to do over and over. Any exercise you do, you don't want to spend more than about 30 seconds on. Any longer than that, and you're not really focusing in on what's going to be the most help to your tennis game. Biking can be good if you do it in short spurts. It's not something I've done personally, but you can do 30 seconds or a minute pedaling as hard as you can, and then take a couple of minutes and just go easy and rest, and then go a minute or so again as hard as you can, and then go slow and rest and let your body recover. That would be a better way than just doing an hour straight of running. That would be more beneficial to you. However, I still like the sprints, probably more so than the biking, even if you did try to focus it more towards tennis fitness. Lastly, tennis-specific moves, and you mentioned most of these, Mimi, in your email. Any kind of sprinting is great. Shuffling is great, where your feet don't cross, and that's lateral movement. So you're moving just sideways without crossing your feet. The split step practice is great. Working on getting yourself to an athletic position, an athletic stance with your weight moving forward or balanced forwards a little bit so that you're ready to move either way. Back pedal is great. And lastly, karaoke step, or it's also called grapevine, where you do cross your feet one behind the other. That's also a good footwork exercise to be proficient in. A good way to practice all of these is to get a fitness ladder. It's also called an agility ladder. If you haven't ever used one and you're serious about increasing your tennis fitness and your footwork and your agility, I highly recommend getting a fitness ladder. There's all kinds of different exercises and drills that you can do to increase your foot speed and your quickness. Typically, people who've never done it before start off very uncoordinated, and it's really tough for most people the first couple times. But as you get the hang of it and your feet started getting more coordinated, foot speed really gets improved a great deal. So, Mimi, that's what I recommend. Hopefully that's helpful to you. Okay, that does it for Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 16. Thank you so much for joining me today. Hopefully the content that you heard was helpful to you. Now get out and practice and use this content to improve your tennis game. As always, if you have a specific question about your tennis, whether it's technique or the mental game or equipment or anything else, you're always welcome to send it to me and I'd love to help you. Just head on over to EssentialTennis.com and fill out the form on the feedback page. Okay, take care everybody, and good luck with your tennis.